This episode of the Oh No 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 podcast is sponsored by Dynamic Industrial Services, the rope access specialists. Every week we talk about the Rovers' latest attempts to climb the SPFL ladder, but sometimes even a ladder won't reach. DIS are specialists in working at height, offering maintenance, inspection, repair and more, right across Scotland. So if you need a rope access specialist and you want a premiership service, visit dynamicindustrialservices.co.uk to find out more.
Hi everyone, and thank you for coming back to Rovers Therapy. I've been on it for 25 plus years now, and it doesn't get any easier. You just have to take it one day at a time. In a season of dizzying highs and creamy middles, the Rovers hit a terrifying low last night, throwing away a two-goal lead with half an hour to play to lose 3-2 against a part-time Arbroath side that had been scudded 6-0 just three nights previously. And while there were some mitigating factors that a lawyer for the defence could point to, none provide any sort of excuse for a team that spent a portion of the evening top of the league, surrendering such a commanding position against a side who will almost certainly be relegated with games to spare. So this is the aptly named Oh No 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 podcast. I am Duncan Cameron, and joining me around the circle today, we have Carol Allison-Smith. First of all, how are you, Carol? Okay, well done for answering that question without any expletives. I don't know how long that'll last today. We've got Blair Hopcroft too. How are you, mate?
I feel like I should lead with, my name's Blair. It's been 1 week since my last game that I enjoyed.
Yeah, it does have that kind of vibe to it today. we've also got Robbie Weir. How are you, mate?
Mentally, Dennis Reynolds screaming into a pillow.
Yeah. I have to say, fair play to anybody who's decided to listen to this, first of all.
It must just be Arbroath fans and Dundee United fans, that'll be it.
So here's a message for you lot. Go and piss off the lot of you.
Leave us alone. We don't want any of our own medicine. Tastes horrible.
Sit down. We do not want to take it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we'll do is we'll come back around and we'll go through kind of chronologically, we'll go through some of the key moments from this one. But I think we might as well just address the overriding feeling and the overriding kind of reactions from last night, first of all. And I mean, yeah, listen, to be fair, we've had a lot of fun on this podcast, kind of laughing at Jim Goodwin's inability to cope with pressure. But Robbie, I'm going to come to you first of all with a big point on this. So that's twice in a row now. Rovers have played Arbroath and they've only come away with a point, despite being 2-0 up after an hour in both of those games and various other factors coming in as well. Do you think there is a significant question there in regards to kind of Ian Murray and the Rovers' collective capability to cope with expectations when they are maybe heavily favoured?
I genuinely have no idea. It's a very hard question to answer. There's just been two games now where it's been really freak. We should be at 9 points against Arbroath, and admittedly, funnily enough, the worst performance over the piece was the one that was the first game. And yet, we're in a position where it's now looking that we've dropped a draw and then dropped a loss in each of them respectively. So yeah, it's tough to really make heads or tails of it, because it was just, for an hour of that match, we were absolutely cruising it. You could have got to an hour and there is no way that anyone in that stadium remotely thought that Arbroath were going to be the ones that would take away all 3 points. And it's just I don't know what happened. It's inexplicable. It was like we got hit by a sucker punch, and then after that, it was completely, the heads went. Everything just went. And there's a lot of questions to be asked today. Naturally, we're recording this ahead of the game that Dundee United have against Partick, so we don't know how the weekend will go overall. But even still, there needs to be more collective responsibility among the sort of defence and defensive midfields, I feel, and how it is. I don't think you can really blame injuries. I don't think you can blame the weather. I think it's just a case of players that maybe in the case over the piece, we need a collective response from the team, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there are, I mentioned it in my intro there, that there's a lot of things that you could point to if you were, for whatever reason, trying to kind of mount a defence of that. I just don't think any of it stands up. Not in the way that it should. Like, you talk about, it's like an old cliche, you talk about like the weather in a game could be a leveller. With utmost respect to Arbroath and to Jim McIntyre, if you take a team that is, for portions of the evening, top of the league, against a team that's bottom of the league, the weather shouldn't be enough to kind of bridge that gap. Bear in mind that the weather is there for both teams.
Yeah, the weather wasn't a factor for 60 minutes of the game. That's exactly the thing.
That's it.
So you can't blame it for the final 30.
And then you look at things like... on you come, Blair.
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm not... And I want to get this out of the way now. I don't want to make excuses for them because it was pathetic. But I do think the weather actually was more of a factor than we're giving it credit for, because it massively changed in that last half hour. And for me, actually, if you look at the turning point in the game, it actually seemed to change on the weather, which is, I'm going to be honest, less of an excuse and more of a reason why I'm annoyed. Like, so we can't play if it's raining and the wind's blowing in our face. Like, it did genuinely lift up the wind, and it was to that bottom corner where the scoreboard is. So it was definitely, you could see like Kev's kicks and stuff weren't getting to the halfway line, and I know he's not the best kicker anyway, but it definitely played a part. But frankly, I think that's pathetic.
So that's what I mean. That's my point, is it did play a part. It absolutely did. So you could point to it if you wanted to and say, look, that is a factor. Like, categorically, if you could have, you know, if you had a free choice of which way to shoot in that second half, you would choose the direction that Arbroath were shooting. That shouldn't be enough of a factor to turn that around. You've also got Keith Watson gets injured in the first half, right? That's, again, that is a factor. It's a contributing factor, but you've got to be better than that. You've got to be enough that if you're top of the league, which again, as I say, we were after the 26th minute, and you're playing the team
technically from the very first minute. As soon as the game kicked off.
Oh, you're right. Actually, had a point in their pockets at that point. So you're top of the league. It should take more than one injury and some weather. Like, you've got to be able to. And as you say, Robbie, for an hour they did it and they were absolutely fine. And then you lose a goal. Sometimes that happens. There's defending in that could absolutely be improved upon. But even at that point, you've got to be better than that, basically. And it's not even... And I think the thing is, right, so this happened in the home game against Arbroath. And I think everybody was like, oh, it should have been better, but that's a freak occurrence. And the boy scores the goal and the goalie and all this stuff. When it happens twice, you don't have that defence anymore, really. And a little bit, I mean, again, to... try and be a little bit kind of self-aware, right? So when Morton went to Tannadice and Jim Goodwin was greeted about the fact that they got bodied, by the same token, you kind of go to Arbroath and complain about the weather. Like, it's not a surprise. It's not a unique factor that you couldn't have seen coming. And what you've got to do is adapt to it. And I just don't think we did that particularly well.
Well, I find... particularly is that second goal was like, I think you could probably listen to this and say, I think both people, like, if they listen to that, people listen to the opinion of like me there and they listen to the opinion of Blair, I think we're both right in a sense. And that second goal summed it up for Arbroath. Like, very much a case that the weather had an impact there.
Deal with
my
it.
My God, we should have dealt with that way before. And oh, I know 100%. That, again, caveat this, I'm not a professional footballer. And if anyone was listening to this that was involved in that incident, I'm sure they'd say, man, this guy's an idiot. But by God, you just want to see someone absolutely batter through when it's that stramash in the middle, and then it's just not dealt with at all. But again, okay.
Do you know what, for me though, it's not even just that. Like, so the way we ended up playing, like, if you take the back six that were on for that half hour, so you've got your back four, right? Now in there, you've got Liam Dick, who's been a captain of this side. You've got Ewan Murray, who's been a captain of this side. You've got Scott Brown, who's the captain. You've got Ross Matthews, who's a captain. You've got Sean Byrne there, who's an experienced footballer. And you've got James Brown, who's an international footballer, right? And there was no leadership, absolutely none. And it was like, it's not just, I mean, Robbie's right. You could actually expect somebody, just go and make a foul, just break the game up, slow it down a little bit. They, after they scored the second goal in particular, they had momentum. And we never stopped it at any point. I mean, go down and pretend you're injured for 2 minutes. Just slow the game down a little bit. You know that thing, like, and I know I get the mickey taken at me for this, but the ice hockey thing. Like, I was screaming out for Ian Murray to call a timeout. Like, just take 30 seconds, get them together and go, what are you doing? Like, sort yourselves out, get your head screwed on and get going again. Because at the moment, you're panicking, and we need to stop panicking. We need to recenter. And not one of them did that. Not one of them pulled anybody else to the side and said, like, come on. It just seemed to get more and more frantic. There's pointing and there's shouting. And I'm like, take control. No one did it. Really frustrating.
Carol, give me your overriding emotions, please.
I'll try and keep it clean. I was about to say pish. That's not really starting very well. I'm trying to keep the language clean. It was just. I'm gonna go to Murray's post-match interview. I think about 2 minutes into, or half minutes into his interview, you just see his face, and it's this realization of disappointment. Of we lost three goals in 30 minutes. Our defense literally just blew up in front of us, and he doesn't know what to do with them. He's talking about we need to talk about the mental thing, but I'm going to pick up on what everyone else has said. They didn't adapt. They didn't trust each other to make a decision, and nobody had the cojones to take charge. Someone just needed to take charge.
I think that's...
Take your politics in your hand and do it.
I don't know if you're just swearing in Spanish now to get around our self-imposed language improvement
and
policy.
I'm loving it.
So the thing for me, and I kind of mentioned it as I asked Robbie that first question, we seem very comfortable in the role of not necessarily even underdogs, but we're happy in a fight and we're happy in a scrap. And you see that the games against Dundee United and the games against Dunfermline, who, despite the fact they're down at the bottom of the league, and I'm not going to dig with that genuinely, just actually just relevant to the point, today's not the day to be having a dig at them after that last night. But like, despite the fact they're down towards the bottom of the league, because they're derbies, it's a different atmosphere and it's a different expectation, and we're getting the results in those. But I mean, they are both games we've just not, Robbie, as you said, even the game we won, we were poor and really quite fortunate to kind of get away with that night. It's just, I don't know, it's a really difficult thing to put your finger on, because we've obviously got loads and loads of points. Like, you know, at this stage of the season, it would be kind of revisionist.
I was going
to
say, we got 0 points actually last night. 0 points.
Well, yeah, but I suppose what I mean is, like, we can't suddenly be like, oh, this team can't cope with X, Y, and Z.
No, I know.
You know, based on one game, but it is notable that we can beat Dundee United, but we can't beat Arbroath convincingly.
It's so, so weird. It's so weird that, like, we've got this situation where we picked up all those late points in the first half of the season, and we'll go to Tannadice and we'll beat Dundee United. We'll play Dundee United at home and we'll score a last minute winner. We'll go down to Ayr twice and beat them. We've beaten Cali Thistle twice and we've not beat them for 20 years. And yet the teams down the bottom we're starting to now struggle against. And you're just, it makes no sense. That game should have been absolutely dead and buried. And that was my overriding feeling when I came out, aside from being absolutely fizzing last night. I just felt really disappointed for the players who were in the attacking final third because they did so well. Josh Mullen had probably one of his best games in a Rover shirt so far. He was completely roasting their left back. Zach Rudden manages to get a goal. Kyle Turner was looking more and more lively. Lewis Vaughan was dipping in and out and got him behind the defence a few times. Those players, admittedly, we could have been a few goals up, but it's not really... It's just a situation that was just unfortunate in that case. Like, again, I said it before. Knew before the game, Derek Gaston's going to come back in and he's going to have a blinder. Like, it was just automatically going to happen because it's what happens when...
But I'm not... Robbie, I'm honestly not convinced he did. I mean, he made one really good save in the first half down to his right from... Vaughan. Down to his right hand side. Made a really good save.
The one he tipped over the bar.
Yeah, but that was offside already. That was the one that had bounced back off the post and Rudden, and it was a good save, but it was already offside. He didn't actually do a huge amount, and he's one of the... You're right. I mean, he is one of those goalkeepers who does... He thrives on those kind of games. Do you know what I mean? But I go back to the Ayr game. I just feel like we've got this fragility to us, like this really... We've talked about it before, this really soft underbelly. And that Ayr game, right, so we're 2-1 up. And I mean, I wasn't there, but I watched the highlights and stuff and spoke to the boys that were there. And everybody said we were relatively comfortable and kind of dealing with it. They had a bit of possession and a bit of ground, but we were comfortable. But then you begin to wonder, had they managed to sneak one of those in, do we lose that game? Probably, actually, because it just feels like we've got to this stage where if we concede one kind of in that period of the game, we're probably going to concede a second or a third. And it's just this kind of, I don't know if it's in their heads, I don't know if what it is, it's like this capitulation. Soon as the second last night, I knew where that game was going. There was no doubt in my mind that they were going to win that game because we absolutely shat the bed.
But we stopped playing to our strengths as well. Totally. That's the really, really frustrating thing. As soon as the second goal goes in, we start hoofing it long straight away. And I know that we've played a bit long, hoofing it long into the wind. That's not who we should be. Absolutely not who we should be. Certainly not on a night against Arbroath. But we are far better when we're getting the wee balls into the corner and you've got the likes of Josh. I don't understand how we saw that situation and Josh Mullins continually getting in behind our left back and we thought, nah, we'll change it away from that. It just made no sense to me. And I maybe there's a football rationale behind it that I just don't get, but... Aye, just stupid. It's just panicked. Aye, panicked's the perfect way.
I think it's almost... We said it before. We said it when we had that sticky patch in the games where, you know, like we drew 4 each with Ayr and we should have won and a couple other points. I remember saying that it feels like this team lacks an element of just puffing their chests out a little bit and actually just going, this is fine. Like, we are, and I see this, you know, I'm not being too big for our boots, but like the league table will tell you, we are better than our Arbroath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Yeah, over the piece. Right.
Like this Raith Rovers side is better than this Arbroath side.
Yep.
So just play them at football. Like just do what you do, let them do what they do, and you might... But there'll still be freak occurrences. Things might still happen. But you're not. There's no point abandoning it. And it's that point where, as you say, Robbie, the first goal, it's a decent hit. And it's one that, I mean, you could defend it better, but it's not a huge mistake from anyone, really.
No.
It's how you react to it. And they react to it by it going to pot and trying all sorts of daft stuff. And then, like, the second goal... Obviously, all the headlines and all the talk in the second goal was about the goalkeeper. And this is not to let him off the hook, and I'm going to come back to him in a second. But the build-up to that,
is like a primary school game,
yeah,
where there's just Rovers players kind of running, chucking themselves ball around, aye, running at the ball, but not in a particular, like, sometimes what you want objective is guys manner chucking themselves at the ball, but they're not doing it like enough to actually, you know, it's like take the ball or it'll be a foul or what. And there's a couple there with the Rovers are looking for fouls. Listen, there might be, but there's not enough to, there's four or five chances to kill that. And a couple of them are maybe more unfortunate than others, but it's just like, you've got to be stopping that before it starts.
So I have sorry, I was just going to say, on exactly that point, Duncan, sorry for cutting in, I have a really unpopular viewpoint, and I know this is not going to be popular, but it's you know, we didn't come on a podcast to know your opinions. I thought Ross Matthews wasn't very good last night. I wasn't particularly convinced with the performance. I think he's a hard-working, blood-and-thunder kind of midfielder. And for me, in the build-up to that second goal, we needed somebody to actually just put their foot in the ball and do the basics. And I don't think that's something that Ross does particularly well, actually. I think he kind of throws himself in a lot and stuff, which is great when it's great. But when you need that calm, composed kind of presence, I don't feel that's him. And I hate myself for saying it, because I love the guy. I really do. I didn't think he was very good last night.
So on that point then, I suppose I will join you in saying something that's maybe a little bit unpopular. I haven't been as vocal as other people about getting Ross Matthews back, because I really like him. I'm really pleased we've got him. I think he's a very good Championship player. But at the same time, when we've been talking about, like, he's fit again, is he coming back in? I'm looking at the other options in the midfield and I'm like, I don't know how many of these guys Ross Matthews gets in ahead of. However, I thought first half last night, I thought he was excellent. I was really pleased. I was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't say that on the podcast. I'd look like an idiot. He's kind of running the show, and he's box to box, and he's doing all the stuff that he's good at. And I was like, I'm delighted he's back. But I do know what you mean.
There's a limitation,
almost to all action at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's that when what you want is more of a kind of put your foot on the ball. However, what I would also say is that Sean Byrne is standing 6 yards to the left of him. That's exactly what he's there to do. Put his foot on the ball, slow it down. And he just, for, you know, their powers combined, did not achieve that in that second half. And it's,
I don't know if it's just me. No, carry on, sorry.
I was just going to say, you struggle to point the finger at kind of anybody in particular last night, because it's a collective feeling. And I actually think that you can almost split the team into two. And basically, or even split the game into two, because as Robbie says, I thought Josh Mullen was excellent for the most part. Kyle Turner had his best game in a Rovers jersey by a fair distance. I thought Vonnie was excellent. I thought Zach Rudden was excellent. And in the first half, I thought Ross Matthews was excellent, and Sean Byrne was very, very good in the way that he kind of facilitates a lot of the rest of that. In the second half, Matthews is really poor, Byrne is really poor, right across the defence, you've got mistakes all the way through.
Yeah.
And I think it only takes one or two of those guys to actually turn that around. Because again, our both are not world beaters. And more so than anything else, their morale was absolutely as low as it could possibly be. Yeah. They get beat 6-0 three nights ago. And I was saying to you guys yesterday,
and they're 2-0 down at this point.
Yeah. And I was saying the one thing you don't want to do is give them any kind of encouragement. You can just be boring, because they will beat themselves if you don't give them an inch.
Both of those Arbroath games that we've played, the last two Arbroath games, have been the games where you've really fought after the first half, or after about, 50 minutes of the game, you're thinking, right, this is our chance. Put to bed this ridiculous statistic that we're only winning games by one go and we will go on and body them. And then in both games at that moment, there's been 15 minutes of madness and then it's completely chucked it. It's just so hard to wrap your head around.
Where I was on the ground, there was a lot of kind of chatter, and certainly in my group of mates, it was the same. There was a lot of people saying that they weren't very pleased with the starting lineup. That they thought that the starting lineup was maybe two or three changes too many, or whatever. My argument with that was, well, we're 2-0 up, so the starting lineup wasn't that far wrong. Like you can't massively criticise it. I must admit though, the one change I still don't quite get, unless there's a knock or they're worried about him or whatever. For me, Sam Stanton, like he is the metronome. He makes everything tick. Everything that's been good about us this season has been with him. He goes out the team, we go on a 6-game losing streak. He comes back in, we steady the ship. Like, and I don't know if that's psychological. I honestly don't. I don't know if it's just that everybody's attached this to him and like he just needs to be there like a comfort blanket. But it was the one change last night where I thought to myself, if there's one player who's going to get his foot in the ball and just control that game a little bit more, it's probably him.
I think
I didn't get it.
3 games in 6 days is a lot, especially for someone coming off the back of an injury. So I think starting lineup wise, I think that's justifiable. I think that's almost probably sensible. What I would be looking for though is the minute the first goal goes in. Half an hour to play. Mm-hmm. You put them on there.
Because you've still got plenty of time to recover. You've got, what, eight days, is it? 7 days between the next derby. So,
Just because we kind of talked up to it, the goalkeeping for the second. I think you can see the thought process the whole way through.
Because it happens so slowly.
watching it back, it's worse than I thought it was.
He's almost. Did you see the photo? The photo that the BBC put up on Twitter is even worse than the video.
It's even worse. I mean, it's
actually embarrassing.
He's backing away from it by the time it reaches him, and it's the boy's barely off the ground when he knocks it in. But I think that, so. The thing for me with this, right? So again, we'll go back to talk about the weather, right? So because the weather it's a contributing factor. That cross hangs in the air. That's why it doesn't reach him as quickly as he thinks it's going to. But again, it wasn't like somebody switched on a wind machine as the cross came in. Like the wind was blowing. And the main thing for that is you watch Kevin Dabrowski week in, week out, and he punches a lot.
Yep.
And it works for him. And it's fine. Right, some people don't like it, some people do, but when you watch enough games, you think, oh, he's punching these, actually, we're not conceding too many goals directly from these kinds of situations. So fine, see, you take that, right, he's punching it, he punches it clear, grand. Why did you try and catch that? Like, why, of all evenings, when the wind is blowing and the rain is coming into your face, of all times to decide, I'm going to catch this. And you only have to look at the other end of the park where you've got Gaston who keeps goal there every week. And that second half, he only had to come for a couple. He punched them both. Like, because it's a... you can't be trying to catch that.
It's funny as well, because the main criticism that everyone has of Big Kev, aside from the two-footedness that Blair's mentioned before,
Or
lack of no fitness, is that he sticks to his line and that he's afraid of coming for crosses. So now he's going to have an absolute phobia. It reminds me of being a kid going on scout camps and, like, you know how there was like the slip and slides with the bungee cords, like basically you run along this long thing. It's like that. It just like it almost like it slows down and he gets pulled back. It's like so bizarre. It just made no sense. Very frustrating. Shame as well, because again you want Kev to do well, but.
It was awful.
Self-sabotage. I mean, self-sabotage.
It was genuinely embarrassing. And he knew it. He punched the floor the second it happened. Like, he's not an idiot. But Ewan Murray also deserves a lot of criticism at that point. Blocked the run. Ewan Murray actually kind of moves out the way so that he doesn't get bodied by Kev. Like, either take the hit, block the run, didn't he just move it the road? Like, that's no good enough. It just isn't.
They were all playing their own individual games at that point. Yeah. I think Kev was on a different planet. They were all in an individual game. And we're going to go back. We're going to go back to this. Nobody was making a shout. Nobody was screaming. Someone do something.
I miss Marvin Andrews.
Yeah. I
miss Keith Watson. Completely. Yeah. To be fair, there's a lot of people said it, but it's true. Yeah. No, it doesn't happen if Keith Watson's on the park.
It just doesn't. Regardless of whether it's Keith Watson who ends up under the cross, that doesn't happen with Keith Watson on the park.
Yeah. And that's actually, to me, is a damning indictment of Ewan Murray, because Ewan Murray's a really experienced defender. And actually, I've been a little bit underwhelmed, not with his performances, because he's genuinely very good, and the throwing your body on the line and doing all of that stuff he does really well. But I don't know if it's having a centre midfielder beside him that he doesn't trust, or that he's not able to read, but he's also not marshalling it. And maybe that's because Bruni's an experienced player and he doesn't feel he can. But for me, if you're a centre-half and you've got a boy next to you who's not, and he's nowhere he needs to be, you're screaming at him and you're telling him exactly where he needs to be. And I just don't feel that. That leadership is there, which is definitely what Watson brings us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we've talked about it before. I think it's an element of having to second guess all the time. And all of that stuff. The first goal, if you can bear to go back and watch it, is a really good illustration of the kind of things that happen where, and we've given Scott Brown a lot of credit for adapting into his defensive role, and he has, as an individual, he's done fine. He's done admirably well. And it's the kind of thing that if you were one of these slightly sketchy football agents, you could cut together a really good YouTube showreel of Scott Brown as a centre half this season,
like,
with sort of
like
Western European showreel techno under it, and he would be, you know, acquitting himself well as a defender. But what you lose is all the little things, and it's like death by a thousand cuts, where he's not constantly being out jumped or like missing critical interceptions like Ricky Little does for the Rovers' second goal. Like, he's in his own 6-yard box and he takes a big swing at it and misses it. Bruni's not making those kind of mistakes. He's individually, he's doing about as well as you could possibly expect. But the effect it has on the overall unit, and you see it, as I say, you see it in the first goal where it's a relatively kind of speculative pass that gets knocked. And he steps out to go and sort of compete for it. Now, whether the wind catches it or what, I don't know. Really, neither Scott Brown or the Ar Broth player particularly sort of wins the ball. It kind of bops back down. But what happens at that point is it's like a defensive diamond, effectively. When you look, if you freeze frame it, you've got the two fullbacks are out wide. Ewan Murray is bang in the middle of the park, a couple of yards deeper than them, which is fine. And Scott Brown is ahead of him. So they are directly in a line. And the striker that Scott Brown is with is dropping in, and the other striker's going left. And what happens at that point is Ewan Murray can kind of see it all, and he's pointing at Brown's man, ostensibly, presumably, to say, stick with him. You go and track that run. And what he does is, for a split second, he doesn't commit to that strategy that he has determined.
Yeah.
So he points to Bruni and says, you go with that one, so that presumably he can go with the other guy, which is Jay Burt. And he doesn't. He basically holds and tries to cover three angles. So he tries to cover McIntosh and the ball and Burt. And what happens is, when the ball goes to Jay Burt, he's a half step behind. So instead of being able to close the close the striker, he's that half step off, and that's what gives Bird the space to turn on his right foot and get that shot away. And it's a great finish, right? It really, really is. They're really well with it. There's no blaming the goalkeeper, and there's not a critical, obvious error in there. It's not like, oh, you were playing a central midfielder in defence, and he missed a tackle or something. It's the movement, and I say, and it's the second guessing. Because if that's Keith Watson, even if he does what Bruni does, where he steps out first and then doesn't win the header, Ewan Murray's not thinking he's going to go, I'll need to tell him where to go. And then he just does what he does, knowing what Keith Watson will do. And it's that dynamic over and over again. And it's why, when you look at the cold, hard numbers,
we've conceded more goals this season than Dunfermline have and than Cali Thistle have. One of those two teams will be in the relegation playoffs at the end of the season. Mm. And with whatever it is, 10 games to go, we've conceded more goals than they have. And it's... At this stage of the season, we basically don't have much we can do about it, to be honest.
No.
You can make arguments. And listen, brought Lee Ashcroft in.
We could score goals. We could score more goals.
But yeah. That's the thing, though. We shouldn't be in a position where we need a two-goal lead to sort of say, oh, we might potentially win this. It should be a case of...
At this stage, we need
a three. We need a three.
I know. Well, that's it. We shouldn't... But we shouldn't be in that position, though, where it's like...
No, we shouldn't.
We should be comfortably saying, yeah, our defence is going to shore this game up. We're going to have game management. We're going to see it out. It wasn't a failing on the attacking front last night at all. And
no.
It's just... What gets me is the fact that I said before the game, like, the lineups come out, and I said, that's the back line we need for the last 11 games. When half an hour that was fucked, it was gone, because Keith Watson gingered. Like, where are the... There's no like rationale behind it. It's just daft injuries. The fact that you see two previous league-winning experienced centre-halves and both of them get injured when, what, a two-week period. It's just...
I said this last night. We went from signing a centre-half we probably didn't need to needing a centre-half and not having any in the space of a week. Mm-hmm. Like, it's wild. Like, we were genuinely, we had surplus. This time last week, we had surplus centre-halves, and we're now, but we're not even one short. We've got Dylan Corr on the bench, but he's clearly not going to get a game.
Murray just
doesn't fancy him.
That was the other thing I wanted to ask. So, as I was coming out the ground, there was two boys in front of us, and they were basically kind of arguing the Dylan Corr of it all. Has that horse bolted, almost? Robbie, in terms of Dylan Corr, is it too late now, effectively? Has Ian Murray made a rod for his own back with Dylan Corr?
Yeah, 100%. I think that for the fans, I'm sure that the fans would be comfortable to see him in and like support him and be able to get through him because he's a natural centre-back. But for whatever reason, Ian Murray's just preferring Scott Brown, which I don't think's the right thing to do. It's covered us a few times this season, more than a few times. But I think that moving forward, like, there's a point to admit that, like, we keep returning back to this situation where Stanton doesn't play, we play Brown in defence, and then we lose or draw games that we should be winning. It's quite clearly a pattern and one that needs addressed. But again, they've got more expertise. They work with them day in, day out, and maybe just doesn't want to rely on them. But I'd far rather that it was a centre-back making a natural centre-back in that position because it gives us the best chance possible. And if he makes a mistake, then again, there's going to be questions asked, but at least you can sort of say, oh, well, that's something that we can build upon and that you could have the option of bringing Brown. But there's got to be a reason. I don't know. It could be anything. It could be attitude. It could be just that Murray just feels differently, having seen him over a longer period of time. Murray wants the experience.
But he's gone out of his way. No, but the thing is, Robbie, he's gone out of his way not to play him.
I know.
He would actively rather put a centre midfielder in there and play a back four. And he would also actively rather play a back three than have him in there. Like, he's genuinely gone out of his way to not select him, which is, just seems odd to me. But again, you kind of take it one way and not the other. Like, you either trust Murray or you don't. And I must admit, at this point, I still do. He sees him in training every day.
100%.
This effect should have a name, like the Fred Eriksen effect or the Johnny Court effect. It's this thing of the more that he doesn't play, the more the fans think he's the answer.
Aye.
Well, like, so
the Yawase effect.
Yeah.
For me, it's not so much about, like, I think Dylan Corr's better or anything. I think playing defenders is better.
Yeah, they're unknown.
And the other thing is, as you say, for me, it's almost too late. Like, you can't really pitch Dylan Corr in now. And I mean, Ian Murray, he was pretty clear in his reasoning. He said earlier in the season, he was asked pretty much directly, and he said, basically, I like Scott Brown's ability to be able to kind of get the ball down and play out from the defence.
Now, I would argue, I don't think we see a huge amount of that. I think you could also argue, again, the boy I was overhearing last night was saying, like, Dylan Corr came out of Celtic's academy. If there's one thing those guys do, it's they play out from defence. They never actually kind of have to do much defending, which is a different question. But I think the thing for me would be, had he, and it, listen, this is complaining about a lot of games that we won, to be fair, when it first came in, we were still getting results. But back when that first decision had to be made of, oh, is he going to put Scott Brown into defence, or is he going to play Dylan Corr? Had he played Dylan Corr at that point, I think by this point in the season, you've got a guy with a good few games under his belt.
Yeah.
Whereas now you're talking about you're in a running. Can you pitch in a guy who's 18, 19?
I just feel like this whole argument about, you know, Brown's the more attacking option and stuff, and it's true, he is. But I feel like that's when you're picking a centre half, the ability to play out from the back is like the icing on the cake. And at the moment the cake's stale, but it's got lovely icing on it. Do you know what I mean? It looks very pretty, but it's no working. Like, and it's there's got to be a realisation that you look, and I think there is. I have to be honest. I don't think Ian Murray's sitting there going, everything's going swimmingly at the moment. I mean, he brought in Lee Ashcroft. He knows it's not going swimming.
Yeah, I mean, he brought in Kim Watson
as soon as he could, because he knows it's not going swimmingly. I don't think he's an idiot. And as much as some of our supporters seemingly do, I don't think he's an idiot. But there is this persistent third option that he just will not go to. And yeah. I let him go. Release him if that's the case. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's
just, you're not going to play him.
That's it. It just kind of feels like it's just got all the airs of a player that's waiting for the contract to end, and then he can move on to something new. And I feel like he'll get another SPFL club, whether that's in League One or League Two, or maybe a club in the Championship, will like look at him and say, actually, we feel that we can do a turn there. But again, it's not doing anyone any favours at any moment.
With 20 minutes to go, if Scott Brown got injured, what do you think Murray would have done?
Point, he'd have chucked somebody else on anyway, because we would have been,
or even if we were 2-0 up still and Scott Brown gets injured,
I don't think he's completely sort of written him off entirely. I think he prefers Brown. Maybe he still would, but I don't know. I'm saying a lot of this with very little evidence. As I say, I've not seen a lot of football at Dylan Corr. I don't imagine many Rovers fans have, based on the available evidence that we've got. Mm. It just seems... It's for lack of alternatives, as I say. I think when you watch how we defend sometimes, there are symptoms there that are a direct result of one of your defenders not being a defender. So there's a natural kind of clamour to say, well, could we have not played the defender? And as you say, like, Ian Murray sees him every day in training. Maybe technically he's not a great defender. I've got no idea. Either way, I really don't. But that's always going to be a frustration for you. You can't watch that game and not come away, you know, asking questions about the defence and the way that we defend. I mean,
could really do an update on Lee Ashcroft. I would absolutely love to hear about like what's happened with him and if he'll be back, because it's just one of those ones where he's a player that would offer so much. And I know that Murray was saying 4 weeks would be the best case scenario, but you really hope it's looking on the best case scenario and that we can get him back, because
I think even that, to be fair, I think maybe has been given more sort of weight than it should have done. I mean, in that interview, Ian Murray literally says
right
he's just guessing based on his experience of just hamstring injuries in general. He's not even really talking about Lee Ashcroft. So, I mean, I suspect we'll get it. The courier will almost certainly get it first at some point over this weekend. But it doesn't.
Doesn't feel like no news is good news, does it?
No. I just happened to catch a little bit of the Courier's kind of Dundee podcast. Just that there was a kind of reference that they might discuss it. And George Cran, he didn't have any kind of update, really. But again, just like the tone of in which he was talking about it, it's nobody seems to have an optimistic kind of angle on this. It doesn't have a great feel to it at all. You have to just say, like, that's just rotten luck for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And you can't legislate for that. I mean, hopefully Keith Watson's injury is not a bad one. Ian Murray seemed a bit more optimistic about that. But I don't know, it's just...
Carol, I know you watched Ian Murray's interview and you took some notes. I wanted to take from that, just because... And I don't want to just kind of pile on, but
we've given him a lot of credit, and I'm going to readdress the balance just slightly. He kind of made reference to the scheduling for this, and he said it in relation to Keith Watson. You know, we had to play 3 games in 6 days, and to an extent, the point I'm going to make doesn't really address that. That's still fair enough, but I find it a little hard to take when you're complaining about scheduling, when the team that's just beaten you are part-time and they've been at their work in the morning and on Tuesday before the game that they played then. That, scheduling-wise, you could not ask for a better time to play a part-time team than on a weeknight that should have been a weekend. It should have been played on a Saturday. It gets played on a Friday night. That's a gift. They should be fizzing about the fact that a weekend game's been moved to, like, the fact that a lot of their games get moved to Friday nights for the telly. That's a real disadvantage. It's like a sporting disadvantage for them.
Good.
And I just think to come out and kind of, I don't know.
I'm not convinced. Of the two, to be fair, managers, I'm also not convinced many of them have day jobs, like in the traditional day job sense. I think part-time
things, it's not what it was. It's not what it was. Like, it's not 10, what it was, but it's still...
There's two managers there, and one of them's complained about the schedule, and I don't think it's the one who should be, basically.
Yeah. I feel like the main thing for part-time is, if you were going to argue it, they're part-time, we're full-time. As a part-time club, they're getting less time. They'll be working primarily on fitness and organisation, but we would get more time organised, yet we were the side that had no organisation in that last 30 minutes last night. That's the main thing I would take from it. But
I want to pick up on that. Is that I'm going to make a theatre reference here, so we're going up completely off sport, is that Murray's like a director. He's directing his actors and he should trust them to perform on the night. And what there just doesn't seem to be is that mental trust or that trust in some understudies, going back to Dylan Corr. I just don't think Murray, I think he knows he could be good, but he doesn't trust them to perform on that stage. And there just isn't that. Murray doesn't trust them at the moment. He doesn't trust them to drop the ball at a certain time, but doesn't seem to be able to communicate that to them. And I don't understand why. And we can't keep making excuses. It wasn't the weather. It wasn't the scheduling. We just weren't good enough last night. We weren't good. The first half was good, but we weren't great. We weren't fantastic. So and the second half was just reminiscent of last season, where our heads went down. Instead of puffing our chest and going, we've got another 20 minutes of this, let's finish this off, it's heads down and start nipping each other. And I don't get it.
In danger of getting into happy clappy territory, because I am not happy clappy at this point, because I'm raging. But I'm going to defend Ian Murray a little bit on both of those points, if you'll indulge me for a couple of minutes. So the first one, Duncan, I don't think he's complaining about the scheduling in the true sense of complaining about the scheduling. I think he's trying to rationalise why Keith Watson's pulled up with a slight groin strain, is that, you know, 3 games in 6 days, it's a lot of football, and logically, players are going to get niggles. They are. Because as much as you want to rotate, you can't rotate 11 players. So you're always going to have some boys that play more than others. And then the second point, I actually think he does trust the majority of his squad. I think you're 100% right on him not trusting Dylan Corr. I think that's a really glaring example. Scott McGill's another one who doesn't seem to be getting a sniff at the moment. But he rung the changes last night. And when the team line came out and there was a few folk complaining straight off the bat, like, oh, too many changes or whatever. And I keep going back to it. You want to win this league, you beat the bottom team away from home or at home. It doesn't matter. Like, you win that game. And if you can't beat that Arbroath side with the team that we put in the park last night, quite honestly, you didn't deserve to win the league. Like, I think he did actually trust quite a bit. I mean, he played Kyle Turner, who's by any Rovers fans' judgment has not, you know, hit the ground running or fulfilled what we thought he was going to be. He's done okay, but like, I mean, I don't think he's done particularly badly, but he's certainly not been what we kind of hoped he was going to be. He didn't even just go to his favourites. I genuinely thought Callum Smith would have played last night. I thought that was a kind of an obvious choice for him. He could have went with two strikers. He could have went with Jack. Well, he kind of did with Vaughan, I suppose, but he could have went Hamilton and Rudden and gone direct. I think he actually did trust them to play football, and he brought people in and changed the system. And yeah, it's just, I think it was just a really bad night at the office.
Yeah, I think it's, there's elements of game management that go beyond personnel as well, though. Yeah. Really, I think it's, we've seen it enough times now, really, that the games that we should be winning, you know, being in winning positions, playing against 10 men. And I don't think it's actually, like, I think it's sometimes easy to talk about, like, bottling it or succumbing to the pressure. It's very easy. I've been doing it about Jim Goodman for weeks. And I think that almost is the thing with Jim Goodwin, to be fair. I kind of stand by that. Like, when you look at it across a number of different scenarios and different clubs and stuff, for whatever reason, pressure seems to get to him. And then he starts saying daft stuff in the press and all this stuff. With the Rovers, it seems more based in the kind of technical aspect or more directly football-based than kind of mentality-wise. Or, at the very least, as you said earlier, it's panicking rather than sort of bottling. I don't quite know what the distinction would be, but it doesn't feel to me like it's, nobody's kind of pulling out of stuff or not committing. No. The commitment is there. If anything, it's like too much commitment is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's panicking and it's not thinking and it's not just doing the basics. And I said it already, but I'll come back to it again. Just reminding yourselves that actually you're top of the league or at the top of the league, and the fact that they've scored a goal doesn't mean that you have to then change everything and suddenly start doing things differently. And you can actually, like, you know, plan A is plan A for a reason, and that it was working fine for the first, you know, hour of that game. The first half of that game, I think, was as good as we've played all season. In large part, to be fair, because our both offered very little. But there were chances and there was control that we've not seen a lot of. And at the point when it goes to 2-0, I think that really was possibly one of the very few times all season that the majority of the Rovers fans probably actually took a little bit of a breath and thought, this might be all right. You know, this might be fine.
100%.
And yeah, then when the first goal goes in, the first Arbroath goal goes in, it felt like the reaction on the pitch was worse than the reaction in the stand. The reaction in the stand was a bit like, oh, that's disappointing. They've scored a goal out of nowhere. Well, that's, but I mean, it's all right. That's one, but that's the first shot on goal, will be fine. The reaction on the pitch was much worse than that. It was panicky and suddenly,
yeah,
see, they've got encouragement and suddenly you're in a game of football that you hadn't been up to that point.
Even after they got their first, we still had the chance with Kyle Turner where it just went wide of the post, just rolls wide to the far side of the post. So there was still like that brief moment after, but then the defence starts panicking and the midfield start shelling it long. The midfield starts panicking a bit. Our forwards can't get their foot on the ball and then we're completely just under the cosh and it's completely gone from there. Just needs to be a big reset after last night. There really does. And it's up to them as a group of players and a dressing room, management, everyone involved in the club, and certainly just to be the ones to take ownership and do that.
Yeah, it's. I think there's a couple of ways to react to a defeat like that. So I only saw a headline, but I got what I needed from it. That Dundee, they get absolutely hammered by Celtic in the week, and and I can't remember who it was, but one of the players was basically saying, we're not watching that back. Like, we get beat. Is it 7-1 in the end?
7-1, yeah.
So like, we get beat 7-1. We're not going to learn anything by watching that back. We just move on. This, to me, is not that.
No.
I think even going back to something like maybe the Airdrie, the kind of Challenge Cup game, we give you 1-0. You could almost have justified that at that point. You're like, yeah, someone, that was a bad night, but on another day it could have been different, so it's fine. I think this is one that you kind of need to actually analyze, go back through and say, this cannot happen again. Like, if you want to challenge for a title, this mm-hmm. cannot happen again. Bear in mind, this is the second time it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. First one, you could almost chalk up to kind of freak occurrence, but you can't have done that twice.
It literally can't happen again as well. That's the thing. Like, we went into last night, and much to the disappointment of a couple of the Dundee United fans on Twitter, the league title was in our hands. It was completely within our own hands. If we won all of our games, we won that league. And now, you know, at 10-3 on Saturday afternoon, it's not in our hands anymore.
Back to needing favours.
Yeah.
But I think the thing for me is that you've just got to look at it, that we've got 30 points to play for, 10 games left, last night's done. You go through your analysis of it and move forward and figure out what's happening. Hopefully Watson's back soon and we can get a degree of organisation. Yeah. Players just need to take a bit of responsibility, and there's the perfect opportunity next week with a derby coming up to reset and go out. And if you get 3 points in a derby and that's us 4 wins out of 4 against Dunfermline in the league, that's a lot of credit in the bank for those players. It's not going to solve everything, but it's going to give us a good chance to move forward, and then we can look at going at 9 games left, step by step. That's all you can do.
It was never going to be plain sailing. There's plenty of twists and turns still to come. Do you know what I mean?
It's too tight a league. I mean, it's a game. It's the league where you expect, not necessarily expect it with regularity, but it's the league where it is least surprising if the team that's bottom of the league beats the team that's top of the league.
But even like today, I've been adamant all last week, and I'm still adamant at this point that, like, sitting here at 10-3, I have absolutely no faith that Partick Thistle will do anything against Dundee United. But if they did, no, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised, because I would have said Airdrie going up to Tannadice. If you told me beforehand they're going to get a 2-0 win there, absolutely no chance. I don't think that. Airdrie are good against us, but they seem to lose against every other team. So you never know what's going to happen.
By that same token, like, sorry, Blair, but Dundee United, as you said, so before last night, if we'd won all of our games, we'd have won the league. We were never going to win all of our games.
No,
now, where we need a favour from somebody, we will get that favour. Yeah. Like, you know, absolutely, I would give exactly you long odds on Dundee United winning every game between now and the end of the season. They haven't looked remotely capable of that. They have looked fragile under the right circumstances. I think they'll beat Thistle today, because that's what they're good at, is going away from home. They're not great at Tannadice, and they're not great against us, luckily, up till this point. But, I mean, as you say, Robbie, would I be overly surprised? No, not at all. Like, the last time at Firhill, they got what they needed, which is a couple of early goals, and then they could stretch their legs, and they were absolutely comfortable. But if that game's 0-0 with 10 minutes to go, you'd fancy Thistle just as much as you'd fancy them the United, if not more. So we will see what will happen with that. I mean, absolutely, it's not a case of kind of ripping up everything that's gone up till this point and, you know, throwing it in the bin. But by the same token, I think, you know, that last Arbroath game, we drew 2-2 and the goalie scored. I think there was an element of, that's football. Ian Murray says that all the time. Says it about injuries and stuff, and he's right when he says it.
Yeah, like, yeah,
exactly. That's football. Sometimes you can't. Some things can't be helped. You give that goalie 1,000 times, he maybe scores one. It just happens to have been that one. Last night, too much of it was preventable. Too much of it was within our control. And even if you give them the first goal as your, well, that's football. You get a decent shot. You get half a yard. You get a shot away, and it goes in. Too much of what happened after that could have been handled differently. But that's what the manager's there for, and that's what the players are there for. That's why they're professional athletes, is to be able to go and deal with these things and yeah, take it into next week and see what's happened. See what happens. Right, listen, we've mumped and moaned for a good length of time there. We never actually
final
really
point.
Yeah.
Just to say, I'm gonna be absolutely delighted if Arbroath go down. Like, seriously, just you look at the bottom of the league, right? Arbroath 23 points. If they don't go down, it's Calais that's getting put down automatically. Going to be delighted to see the back of Calais. If it's Dunfermline, oh, that's going to be a great laugh. Or then Queen's Park, who are spending a load of money. So if it's no Arbroath, it's still going to be a good laugh. But I really hope that Arbroath do go down. I'm just fed up with them. Just sick of seeing the sight of them. They're just a team that have just... All these Angus clubs. Angus is like a graveyard for Raith Rovers title challenges. We went up to Brechin and Forfar before in that season in League One where we finished third and we just got bodied up there every single time. It's just a horrible wee place. Arbroath, don't get me wrong, great ground. But you're just sick of watching football matches there that are just... the same back line and the same shtick from them. And ideally, they'll get punted down into League One and then back into misery and obscurity. And that's me just being an average, bitter, 30-something old man.
I think it's all absolutely fair. Just as to kind of round this off, there's points in the game we have not mentioned. We haven't actually really talked about either of the Rovers goals or Arbroath's third goal. But I think that we've probably wrung a lot of the benefit out of this one. So, Blair, if you want to just give me any final thoughts on this, including on anything we've not really touched upon yet.
Nothing really, to be honest. I feel a bit better, if it's any consolation. Like, this therapy thing works. I thought Zach Rudden was really good last night. I would like to say that. I thought Vonnie was good as well. But I thought I was really impressed with the way Zach Rudden took his goal. Pure instinct. Just the ugliest finish ever. But just
it's such a Zach Rudden goal, though, eh? Like, yeah, me and John were chatting before the game, and it was funny, just before you came along, Duncan, and he's just got that streak of being a wee bit of a bastard about him, but he's our bastard. Yeah. Like, that's this kind of thing that you want, and it's been really refreshing to have him coming in and scoring plenty of goals. Like, what's he up to, 4 now, is it? 3 or 4?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with him, actually, because, I mean, I was really open about not being that fussy about him signing. He's not the player I thought he was going to be. He's chipped in a way I didn't think he was going to. And it's actually probably what we were missing. I think he's been a really good addition to the side. And you've already picked up on it, Robbie, but I thought Josh Mullen was excellent last night. I really felt for him, actually. He did not deserve to lose that game on a personal level as much as anything else. But other than that, it was just scrumple it up and chuck it in the fuck it bucket, because I don't ever want to think about that game ever again.
Yeah. Carol, any final thoughts from you?
I'm just going to quote Ian Murray from his post-match injury. We made a mess of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
That's it. We made a mess of it. And I'm just going to comment, the weather looked absolutely atrocious.
It was horrible.
I'm going to die next week at the Derby game. I'm actually going to freeze to death. I was contemplating a scarf yesterday in 17 degrees. I am not going to survive this.
8 degrees here.
Thanks.
It's all right.
It was cold.
I think it was 2 degrees when I got out of the car.
Yeah. It was proper cold.
15 yards from the North Sea last night. And
I'm just going to ask this question.
I feel sorry for. Sorry, Robbie, I'll let you ask this question in a second. Do you, I feel sorry for anybody who ever has to work the cameraman duty at Gayfield?
Or the electronic cordons.
I thought Livingston was bad enough with their little kind of gantry that's just perched on top of the roof of the stand. But Arbroath have got the same thing, except it's just, I mean, you're essentially like running the same shift as someone who like works on a pirate ship. You're just like
you're, up in the crow's nest.
Yeah, you're like 40 feet in the air, and the North Sea's just lashing over the back of you.
The man with the two sets of glasses shouting at the cabin boy. Classic Arbroath weather, though. But again, you shouldn't have had a factor for me. Shouldn't have had a factor in the game, but just that type of lashing sidewards.
Yeah. Right. Do you want to play a game?
please.
Yeah. Russian roulette.
We'll try. Cheer us up.
We'll try and end on a slightly cheerier note, and we'll have our third round of Should McStay or Should Dar Go?
What's that name?
Yeah, it really is. is there a mug winging its way to the winner on that?
I actually haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't even contacted the boy yet. I'll do that today. I'm kind of now thinking he doesn't even listen. He just follows us on Twitter because he's also not contacted us. So if you are listening, why have you not contacted?
I don't think that's on the competition winner to chase up the prize that they've been promised.
That's fair.
I think you've letting the side down a little on that one.
I'll tweet him today. I also, sorry, just very quickly on that note, I just remembered in the Weavers before we left, and I forget his name as well, I think it's Jim, but I met the guy who made the banner. You know, the Rovers go to Munich and Dunfermline go to Greenock. He was at the game last night and he was in the pub and he was telling me the story about how he made it and was painting at his work and the paint was bleeding through onto the floor and he could have got sacked making it. So I'm going to make sure a mug makes its way to him because we probably owe him a little bit of royalties on that.
Yeah, definitely.
Royalties and mugs.
Doesn't know the details for a copyright attorney. Right, so let's do this. I've got six or seven clues written down for this one, depending on how things go. So usual rules apply. You can bid a guess at any point. Earliest successful guess takes the win.
Can I suggest one wee change? We don't buzz in with our names because I listened back and I'm fed up hearing me say my own name.
Well, to be fair, only you suggested that, and only you stuck by it at any point.
I did it the first time.
You did, aye, Robbie, you did in the first game, but sounds ridiculous when you're listening back.
Fair enough. We can remove that from the from the rules then. Right, okay, so clue number one. I was managed by John McGlynn during my time at the Roars.
Robbie.
Do it anyway. Yes, mate.
Hjalmar Ferrarason.
I tell you, I'm actually going to tell you right now, it's not him, because I could not have written that down.
got it.
go with Sir Douglas of Hill.
All right. Carol, would you like to bid a guess?
Kieran Bowie.
Ooh.
Damar Terarnason. Right, okay, cool. And Kieran Bowie. All right.
Dougie Hill's a wee bit easier.
Yeah.
Robbie, you get your hands off that keyboard. There's no Googling in this game.
That's right, the question.
I want you sharing your screen.
Number two, I was a lone player at Starks Park and I played 30 games. So feel free to update any of these guesses.
I'll go David Smith.
I'll go Kevin Smith.
Ooh.
Interesting.
I'm gonna pass because I'm completely blank.
All right. I scored my only Rovers goal in That's a win fun. Against Stenhouse Muir. Where are you updating? Sticking or twisting?
Only Rovers goal. So it's definitely not him. Only Rovers goal. And a win against Stenhouse Muir. No, I'm going to have to... I know it's not him, but I'm not going to venture a guess at this point.
All right, Robbie?
Nah.
All right, Carol?
Nah.
Okay. Right, next one. I currently play in League One. Any bids from anyone?
Yeah, go on then. Ben Williamson.
I've got a guess.
Okay.
I think I've got it. Callum Crane.
All right.
Oh. No, he scored more than once.
Anyone from you, Carol?
I remember him scoring against Steny, though.
I'm thinking the same as Robbie, but I'm thinking he scored more than one. So I've got the doubt with the one.
All right, this is my my second last clue. A goal that I scored went low-key viral while I played for another club.
Yeah, as I... What is it with you, fullbacks?
That's the fucking left back.
That's what I was going to say. Final clue. Yes, I am serious, and yes, I am a left back. So, well done, Robbie. You're correct. It was indeed Callum Crane.
It's funny, because you start off and you segment it into, like, McGlynn's two spells.
Yeah.
And then we played Stenhouse Muir in the second, so I'm thinking, went down the route of Barjonas initially, and then I was like, he scored against Forfar.
He honestly only score once for us?
Yes, he did. He was with his right foot as well.
Yeah. I remember being very, very happy when we signed him, and then just because he looked really, really good to Alloa.
He's,
funnily enough, Jim Goodwin handling pressure situations, knocking us out of the playoffs.
He's kind of struggled for game time this season. I think he's only played 6 games for Stirling Albion. I think he would be doing better than that, but I don't know if he's had injuries or anything.
Is he not at Edinburgh City?
Nah.
He was at Edinburgh City for a long time. That was the clue that I didn't use.
Is he at Stirling now, is he?
Yeah, joined December. I've dropped out. That makes sense. He'll have played 6 games for Stirling since December. Right, that makes sense.
He's actually, when you look at, I was just having a look at his Wikipedia there, he's not played a lot of football. He's had a lot of injuries, isn't he?
And I mean, like, he was at Hibs and Livingston and really didn't actually play much. It was loan moves where he was playing playing football.
I think that Alloa spell was like the real spell that he thrived. And then after that, I suppose he got a promotion with Edinburgh City. He must have done from League 2 to League 1 in the playoffs when they knocked out Annan, but I know quite a few. I know quite a lot of the people that were at that game, and it was funny. There was a few Marseille fans in Edinburgh just for a weekend, and they saw that the game was on, and they had no idea where Annan was. But they were just like bumped into these Edinburgh City fans, like the all 5 of them in the pub, and just were like, "Oh, do you want to come with us? It's like 3 hours away." Yeah, sure. So they just took them a bag of tinnies, minibus down to Annan, and then, like, they were got involved and kept touch ever since.
Just having a look there, he's 27 year old. He's only played 172 games.
Partick Thistle are 1-0 up on Dundee United, apparently.
And that's the point at which we end the show.
Yeah, it's 3:05, so we'll call it.
Everything is back to perfect. Let's just leave it there.
Therapy session is over. People are happy. You've been positive. Yeah,
and if you're a Dundee United fan and you've got this far, bookmark this. Get it up your
I was just going to say, we'll drop that Callum Crane video into the replies, but actually, no, we can't do that because that would be an incredibly large spoiler for for anyone who's not listened to it at this point. But if you punch into either Google or Twitter, when an Alloa goal sent Air United fans mental, you'll get that if you're not already familiar with it.
It's so funny.
There's a version of Lemmy watching it as well, so Lemmy's literally commentating on it as well.
That was the weekend. Like the weekend before we played Alloa, was it not?
Yeah.
Was that the one Ayr? They put us back at the top of the league and we dusted out the roaring back sound. Yeah, and then we played Alloa and drew 0-0.
Craig Moore missed a last minute penalty for them. Because I remember watching that. My flat.
Brutal.
Yeah. But it's a very, very funny video. And I can't believe Dundee United are getting beat. Right, Jimmy, right up.
Who would get involved in title challenges where nobody wants to actually win the league and it's going down to the last
3 minutes in? Brian Graham.
Of course it is.
What not losing
love
this
that big guy.
Yeah, I'm on way to put a fiver on Dundee United to win.
Yeah, definitely. Right, thank you everybody for listening and for watching again today. Hopefully you've found that a helpful exercise in kind of processing complex emotions. have a look at the show notes. You get links to all the usual places. We will be back presumably Thursday night to look forward to Derby at Starks Park, where I promise at least some of us will turn up in a slightly better mood. So thank you again.